Welcome to a special edition of Hobson's Choice Podcast. Very happy to have with us a longtime scout for the Cincinnati Bengals, Bill Tobin. You may know him better as the architect of one of the greatest teams of all time, the Chicago Bears of the 80s. But for the last for this last decade and a half, he's been plowing the landscape for the Bengals, and great to have a chance to sit down and talk with one of the great men in the game. Bill, I noticed you looking at your I guess what you would call a kind of a little laptop,
an iPad,
a 21st century iPad. Tell me what you were looking at in 1971 when you broke into this business. It wasn't an iPad.
No, it was projectors that you carried around the country, and you usually didn't have a screen, but you showed them on the wall.
But just it would be...
Hopefully it was a white wall.
And you watched them anyway, right? You would actually watch them at the school, right?
Oh, that's what we did completely.
Yeah.
I did Jerry Rice in a bathroom.
Right.
At the school.
How about that? What was that wall? What was the color of that wall?
Well, the color wasn't so bad. The smell wasn't so good.
Yeah, right.
It was the bathroom where the coaches used and everybody else in the building.
Yeah.
But that's the only area they had set up for scout to watch tape.
It was pretty clear you could play, though, I bet, Bill.
It was. I'm still looking for another Jerry Rice.
Yeah. The... And you would carry that thing around. I mean, you carried that thing on the plane, right? The projector.
You carried it on the plane, but it was too big to fit under your seat. The planes were bigger at that time. You had more room.
Yeah.
But you had to put it under the seat in front of you, and you had to cut them down, take about 3 or 4 inches off of them. And
off the projector.
Off of the projector. And so then you could carry it and slide it under the seat on the plane. You never checked them through.
Right. And then you would also thread the tape, right? You would also have to thread the tape, wouldn't you?
You'd
have
when you got there, yeah.
The film, I guess.
Is what it was,
Sure 16 was. Millimeter, right?
Yeah, sure, right.
Then I guess we're looking at your iPad.
Well, the
technology
has improved so much that it's incredible that you should make less mistakes, but I'm not sure that we do. I think we make as many mistakes now as we did back in 1971, 72.
I mean, that's because we're human beings, right?
Well, that's right. It's human evaluating human. And players have a bad day sometimes that you might be evaluating. And you as an evaluator may have a bad day.
Right.
So there's a lot of variables involved there.
How, what you were doing today... How long, you know, looking at the tape or whatever, as we're looking at the draft is, we're about 2 weeks away now. What you did today, how long would that have taken you maybe in the early 70s? The workload you had today, how long might that have taken you? Would it have taken you maybe a week or two?
Well, we were in meetings today with the studying positions as a group.
Right.
Back in the older days, there usually was just one scout that had seen a player, and possibly the general manager had seen the good ones.
Right.
And the head coach would be involved. But, you know, in our early days, the coaches were not involved because we drafted in January.
Right.
And we were working all fall, the scouts. And the scouts, we had two or three in Green Bay when I was there, and we had two in Chicago. And then we had about four or five when I went to Indianapolis, and we still have four or five, but we've got everybody involved here.
Now let's get the timeline for folks. You broke in with the Packers in the early 70s, right?
In the early 70s, yep, 1971, and our first player that we drafted was John Brockington.
Running back, pretty good pick.
Well, he was Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And the next year, I think we did Willie Buchanan, and he was Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And I think the next year we did Chester Marco, a kicker, and we took him in the second round, and he was led the league in points or in that year. He was Rookie of the Year.
Three pretty good drafts.
Yeah, and the fourth one, and I'm lacking the name right now, but he was a running back in New Mexico, or a quarterback in New Mexico, and we made a running back out of him. And at that time, we had six preseason games, And he led our team, led the Packers, and I just came up with his name. His name was Don Woods.
Okay.
And he led our team in rushing in preseason, and we weren't smart enough to keep him. We waived him, final cut down. San Diego picked him up, and by God, if he wasn't Rookie of the Year at San Diego, as a running back. So we had 4 years at Green Bay and had the Rookie of the Year all 4 years.
And that was too good. Then you left, I guess. Or no, you were there for a couple more years, right?
No. That was the last year
I was
there.
Okay.
Dan Devine took me there. I played for Dan at Missouri, and I was the GA for Dan at Missouri. And then when he took the Green Bay job, he hired me as a scout.
Right.
And then when he went to Notre Dame, I went to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Chicago because Jim Finks had been at Minnesota all those 4 years that we had drafted pretty well in Chicago or in Green Bay.
He noticed. Yeah.
And
yeah.
He hired me in Chicago in 1975. Yeah. And our first pick that year was Walter Payton.
Now, what you took the projector down to Jackson State, I'm imagining. You took a look at him. What did you see on tape from Sir Walter?
Well, as luck would have it, I was still working for the Packers when I evaluated him. And whenever Dan went to Notre Dame, Bart Starr took over, and everybody that had been associated with Dan Devine, he let go. And that's when Finks hired me, so I studied Walter on Green Bay's nickel, but drafted him on Chicago's dime.
How about that?
But I wasn't the only one. Jim Finks was my hero.
Yeah. Well, he was actually Jim Finks. I think he was Paul Brown's choice to be commissioner of the National Football League when Tagliabue got the job.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. Quite a man.
Yes, he was.
Passed not a long time ago because of cancer, I guess. Right?
Cancer of the lungs. He was a heavy smoker.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one of my favorites. Outside of my dad, he might have been the most influence in my life.
Now, he left Chicago. When did he leave Chicago and you took over really running the club,
that
right?
That was about 82 or 83.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whenever Hollis was still living.
Yeah.
And he... He fired Neil Armstrong, who was Jim Finks's head coach or selection as a head coach. He fired Neil Armstrong and hired Mike Ditka.
Yeah.
And then Finks started making his exits, and he got out of there.
Right. Two great personalities you were with, Hollis and Ditka. Larger than life guys. What was it like dealing with those guys, Bill? George Hollis first, Papa Bear, what was he like?
Well, it was great because he called me kid all the time. I was young then.
Yeah. Hollis was in his 80s, right?
He was probably in his 80s, yeah.
What was he? Did he have the final say?
No, he had the final say on who he hired as a general manager and who he hired as a head coach, but then he let you do your business. But he wasn't involved in day-to-day operations until he wanted to make a change. He made the change.
He ever gave any advice?
He would come to
the meetings and everything? Yeah.
But he wouldn't contribute. He listened.
Yeah. Did he ever give you any advice? Did he ever ask you a question? Did he ever?
I don't recall exactly. I know this, that whenever I had a second round grade on Richard Dent and Hollis, and we didn't have a 5, 6, and 7 round draft choice, so Hollis and Finks and Bill McGrain and Ditka went to lunch, and I sat in the draft room with Jim Palmer. And
Scout, right. Jim was a scout.
We were the two scouts. We were the road guys.
Yeah.
And sat in there with Jim Palmer, and we monitored the draft, and when the guy was selected, we would put him over with the team that selected him and then move the card.
Right.
But we did all the mechanics, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back from lunch, and Finks looks at the board and he said, hey, Toby, that second round pick, Dent's still there. Should we take him? Because we had an 8th round pick. And I said, hell yes. we should have taken him a long time ago, but we didn't have picks.
Yeah.
And so we took him. Yeah.
Eighth round.
Eighth round. Yeah.
Eighth round. Hall of Famer Richard Dent, right?
Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Yeah. About that.
But those are stories you remember for the rest of your life.
Sure. How is Ditka to deal with?
Ditka was good.
In the draft room. How was he? Volatile guy?
Yeah. He always had an opinion.
Yeah.
Sometimes with less information than a strong opinion. Because he did everything. I love Mike. He and I saw players the same way.
How was that?
Physical, tough, aggressive, hard-nosed.
Yeah. Did you ever have a disagreement or two during the draft with Ditka?
Probably.
About who to take?
Yeah.
Is there anybody you wanted to take that he didn't and you ended up taking him and he turned out pretty good?
Oh, you're talking about Jim Harbaugh.
I guess so.
Yeah. It turned out great. And,
you were a Harbaugh guy, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He was a winner. He was committed. He's all the things I just described.
Yeah.
He made everybody around him better.
Yeah.
He and Peyton were the two most fierce competitors that I've ever been around or ever been associated with on the field.
Mike wasn't a big Harbaugh guy, I guess. I remember that.
Remember
the sideline stuff with those guys.
That was... he changed the play once and threw an interception and Ditka got all over him and we were leading Minnesota 20-0 at the time.
Yeah.
And he jumped all over Harbaugh on the sideline, and the whole team shut down.
Yeah.
And we lose 21-20.
Oh, jeez. Now you went from.
But anyway, Harbaugh was. Yeah. Let me finish selecting him. Ditka wanted to take a defensive lineman or something, and I wanted the quarterback, and I had the final say as far with the approval of the owner, and at that time it was Mike McCaskey.
Right.
Hollis was gone. I think it was 86 or 87.
Right.
And the owner went along with my decision. We took Harbaugh, and Ditka was not real pleased with it because we didn't take his guy. He didn't know that much about Harbaugh to begin with. He didn't study tape like scouts do. Mm-hmm. I mean, he coached. So we go out. He leaves the room. Disgusted, and he and I both always went down and met with the press downstairs on the bottom level of Hollis Hall, and so he left, and we adjusted a couple of things, and then I got ready to go downstairs. He wasn't around, so I go downstairs by myself, and he's outside the room, and we both walk in together, and he takes the mic first. And you thought he absolutely loved Harbaugh. He did a terrific job of complimenting and telling why we took him, and he knew all the reasons.
Yeah.
But he could handle situations very well. He's one of my favorites.
We were talking about that, talking about Richard Dent. You've had a major hand in drafting a slew of Hall of Famers. It started with Walter.
Walter
right?
was
the first one, right? And then there was Dent. Who was an eighth round guy?
Right.
There was
Singletary.
Singletary was he was not a first round guy, obviously. Right?
Second round.
He was a second rounder. Singletary.
Hampton.
Dan Hampton. Hell of a player.
He was a first rounder.
Yeah. And then when you went to Indianapolis, you drafted Marshall Faulk.
First of all, I traded for Ted Hendricks, and he was.
We have to add that.
He was only with us 1 year.
Yeah.
Then 11 goes to Oakland, and we get two number ones for him. But I traded with Baltimore.
Right, and he was a...
Supposedly he had signed in the other league.
Uh-huh.
And
the other league at that time was the World Football League, was that right?
Yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe Thomas was upset with him.
Right, the GM for the Colts, right?
Yeah. Right, in Baltimore at the time. And I traded him a linebacker for Ted Hendricks. He came and gave us an all-pro year.
Yeah.
And then left to go to Oakland as a free agent. At that time, you got compensation if other teams signed your players.
Yeah.
And we got two number ones for Ted, so that one worked out pretty well.
It did.
I didn't draft him, but We traded Weaver.
Right. Right. But you drafted Falk and Marvin Harrison in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, sure did.
That
yeah.
was what do all those guys, those Hall of Famers, starting with Peyton and ending with Harrison, what are there any traits that those guys share? Is there anything you saw on the tape that anything you saw on the tape that said this guy's
they
all
were competitors? Yeah. More. Intelligence was another thing. Mm-hmm. Production was another thing that I always looked for, we still look for. You know, intelligence, smart, talented, fast, big, you know, it's a big man's game and it's a fast man's game, so that helps him in being a quality player, but it doesn't make him a quality player. Yeah. It's really what they're made of inside, and all of these people were quality people. They were not bums. They were not, they were not character issues.
Right. Back then, how much time did you spend with the guys? I mean, did you talk to the guys? Did you talk to the guys?
You talked to the people that you knew that worked with them the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And that would have been the head coach and the assistant coaches and the trainers mm-hmm. and the equipment people. You talked to the people that had been around them. Yeah. You didn't really talk to them directly, but you found out information about them. Right. Work ethic and dependability from their associations and the associations of people that you knew and knew you.
Is it pretty much the same from 1971 to now? Is it pretty much the same principle? But is scouting the same principles or are the players different?
In my opinion, it's the same principles. That's what I look for.
Yeah.
And all of our guys, most of our guys, if not all of them, came from winning programs. Good players win games.
Yeah.
I mean, Peyton, Jackson State, I think they won 11, 12 games that year.
Right.
All of them did. Tennessee State won, you know, 8, 9, 10. You look at all of the players we had in Chicago and the ones we draft here. They come from winning programs.
Right. Well, you were, when you came, when you were first here, now I think you scout the Midwest. Pretty much, right? When you came
in. That's my basic area is the Midwest, and then I look at other players.
Right, you cross-check?
Cross-check, yeah. You know, when it gets closer to the draft.
And when you came in, you were looking mainly at the Southeast, right?
I was Southeast, I was Southeast, Carson Palmer. I came whenever Marvin came.
Right, 2003 was your first year.
Yeah. And I had worked on Detroit's nickel all that fall, and...
Yeah.
And then Mike hired me here.
Mm-hmm.
And
I, great opportunity to come work with your son, right?
It was, it was.
Yeah. What's that been like?
Well, I wish I'd have treated him a little better when he was younger.
How does he treat you here?
He's good. Yeah, he's good. Yeah. Very good. I'm very proud of him.
Yeah.
Does a great job.
I think everyone around the league would pretty much agree he's done a terrific job. This club has done a terrific job with him at the helm in the last, you know, half decade, last decade or so. Why do you think Duke's been so successful at what he's done? Why do you think
well,
it's made him?
He was well prepared. He was a good player. High school, they won the state championship of 6A in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Quarterback.
He was a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, so he comes from winning program.
Yeah.
They beat East St. Louis when nobody beat East St. Louis in those days, but Hershey High School did.
Yeah,
I don't remember what year it was, but it was his junior year. And then he played college football. He was, you know, I figured he was going to go into some kind of fashion or something.
Fashion.
He got a business degree.
I
don't know.
He doesn't strike me as a GQ guy.
I don't know. I figured he was going into a normal business, and once he got his degree, which, you know, he started at Illinois and graduated from Colorado, and he said, I'd kind of like to do what you've been doing. That was the first time he ever indicated he had an interest in what I was doing.
Yeah. I think it helped. He talks about a big influence was hanging around those Bears teams.
As a youngster, he was always in training camp with us, you know, from the time he was out of diapers.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I hired him in Indianapolis. and put him out on the road with a great scout and a great person by the name of Don Joyce. Mm-hmm. And he learned the business from ground up and then took off from there.
How is a Duke Tobin draft room different than a Bill Tobin draft room?
A lot more people than it, that's for sure. I'm not sure it's his draft room.
Yeah. But I mean, he's kind of, you know, he, you know, Mike is, you know, it's Mike's room, I guess.
It's Mike's room. Mike's the owner, and it could be whatever.
But Duke runs it for him. You know, Duke runs it for him.
He organizes it for him.
That's the big difference, I guess. It's a hell of a lot more people than what you have. I mean, when you drafted Peyton, how many people were sitting in the room when you drafted Walter Payton?
Hallis, uh-huh. Finks, Jim Palmer, Bill McGrain, who was the mechanical guy, and our first coach was Jack Pardee.
And
that was it.
About seven guys.
Yeah.
No assistant coaches.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first year. That's whenever Abe was, had coached that 74
season.
Abe Gibran. Yeah. Had coached that 74 season, and then Finks had taken over as the general manager halfway through that season, and at the end of 74. He let Abe and all the assistants go and hired Jack Pardee, who was successful in the USFL, and he hired me, and Jim Palmer was already there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys obviously made a good pick with seven guys in a room, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Here we get what? You think maybe we get...
It's
just different, I guess.
Yeah, it's different, yeah.
It's a different time, But you guys still make good decisions,
Like I say, Finks was my hero. He structured everything.
And I think they do a nice job here of, Duke does a nice job of communicating with the coaches.
Very well. I'm not complaining about it.
Oh, no, right.
Okay.
But I'm just saying.
It was different.
Right. It was different.
But we were drafting in January, too.
Remember,
you played your last game around Christmas.
Right.
And first or second week in January, you're drafting. You had to have the personnel department separate from your coaching department. We didn't go down and help them coach, and they didn't come up and... But, you know, we were just... Pardee was just putting his coaching staff together at that time.
Yeah. Two guys who were in your area in Cincinnati, A.J. Green and Geno Atkins.
You didn't
see them on projectors. I guess you saw them on iPads.
Well, no, it wasn't iPads at that time.
Not yet, right.
No, yeah. It was tape for sure. And it was school visits. See, we make all those school visits to your area.
Yeah.
Because you interviewing a player, what's he going to tell you negative about himself?
Right.
You interview the people that you know and have known for years that... will share with you their weaknesses as well as their strengths.
Is that the key part of a school visit? Is talking.
In my opinion, it is.
That's what you do when you're down there. You're talking to everybody who's been around.
And you're watching tape. Yeah. You used to have to watch tape on campus, but now it's available a week later through the Dub Center. You did all the tape work there, and then you talked to your people, and you watched them practice. And then you drove however far it had to be to get to your next school, and then you wrote reports until midnight or later, and then you'd get up and be over at the school at 7 or 7:30, so you would be the first one there, and you got to control the clicker.
Yeah.
You got to control the film, because there might be three or four other scouts there.
Right, so you wanted to be the guy, the first guy there got the clicker, right?
Yes.
And it was kind of a competition.
Had respect for your elders, and somebody came in you knew, you might share it with him, but you usually watched all together in one room.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'd interview the position coach, and you know, and not a formal interview, but as you're going to practice or as you're leaving practice or as you bump into him in the hallway or whatever, you ask him some questions, and they share with you.
Green and Atkins might be two guys that might get I could add it to your list at some time.
Well, that'd be great. I think they deserve it. They got to, you know, let's get to that championship game and let's win a Super Bowl ring. This one's 30 years old now.
Yeah, that great Bears team. Mm-hmm. Was that the best team you were ever around?
Oh, yeah. It was. And they all liked one another and they all played and they all sacrificed for each other. We pretty well stayed healthy.
Yeah.
But 84 through 88 or so were really 83.
Yeah.
That was Dent's draft year. We had Mark Bortz, we took that year. He made all pro. He was an eighth round pick too.
Yeah. Wow, eight rounds. What's the biggest difference? What's the biggest difference now scouting than in 1971? What's the biggest difference? Besides the technology, I guess.
Would be the biggest tip.
Yeah.
And the availability of viewing a guy for 10 games as opposed to watching two or three games while you're on the campus that particular day.
Right.
And then you may never see him until a bowl game at the end of the year, and then you're drafting.
Yeah.
January or early.
You couldn't take the film. You couldn't take the film with you.
So
you had to take everything.
You had friends on that you could bootleg some. You know, they would make a copy for you. You had to pay them, but they'd get it to your office if I wanted Finks to see it or the head coach to see it.
Right.
But otherwise, you had to go to the campus to get it. But. It's just, you know, we didn't have combines and stuff like that at that time.
Is there ever too much information?
Well, I think there's a lot of times there's too many people stirring the pot.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like you said though, the principles are the same, I guess. Attitude, character.
Yeah.
Size, speed. I mean, this isn't rocket science, I guess. Yeah. I got to ask you, I can't let you leave. We're going to have to ask you. I got to ask you about Mel Kiper Jr.
And I don't know the guy.
You know, that's one of the great. That was one of the great TV moments of the last 25 years or so. You basically told Mel. Mel was kind of criticizing what you guys did with Indy with the top couple of picks in 1994. I guess it wasn't.
Well, the pick
you went right back at
Marshall Faulk.
Yeah, right. And I guess he was.
But see, we never. And this was Finks.
Mm-hmm.
And this was I was raised at his knee. People didn't know what we thought about the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'd go in the draft room, and that was like going to a confessional. It didn't come outside the draft room until draft day.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with, when we took Harbaugh. Yeah. We didn't call Harbaugh. We didn't fly him in. We didn't take him to lunch. We didn't, we didn't show our hand that we were interested in him.
Yeah.
Same thing with Matt Sui when we took him. He said he had no idea. He said these teams were coming around and working him out, and they were calling him and they were promising and all that stuff. He said he never heard a word from the Bears, and we took him in the second round.
Yeah.
But you didn't let your information outside the draft room.
Right.
And when you went in there, you spilled your guts to each other.
Yeah.
And then when you came out, you dummied up to everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't lie, but you don't have to tell them everything you know either.
Yeah.
But it was a lot more confidentiality than there are today. I mean, everybody's got a draft list. Everybody's got opinions.
Right. Yeah. Did you really have guard dogs in front of one draft room?
No, no guard dogs. We just had the door locked.
Okay.
And it was a small one. That was made for when we built Hollis Hall. The draft room was probably twice the size of this room right here. That was it.
And we're basically in a cubicle. Right?
We're in a cubicle. I don't know how big it is, but that's the way Finks designed it. And then when I went to Indianapolis, that's the way I designed it down there when we built the offices.
Small office, but big thoughts. And
if there were mistakes made, we knew who was responsible for making them. That's for sure.
Right.
I told Finks once, I said, I'd like to have a cross check on this guy. And he said, why in the hell did I send you out there if you need a cross check? somebody from Texas Tech.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There was nobody to cross check.
Right. Do you and Duke ever after the draft, do you guys ever talk about what happened? You ever hash it out? Do you ever talk about it or anything?
Not particularly, no.
Yeah, people would be surprised. It's very straightforward. It's very straightforward. People think it's this great big kind of this kind of ceremony, and it's very straightforward, isn't it? What goes on?
That's one of the reasons the Finks didn't want the draft room unlocked. He said, "We go in there, and we're just a bunch of dummies bouncing around. The public doesn't need to know that."
You guys certainly haven't been dummies the last couple of years here. You've been a big reason why it's been successful.
Well, this is a great organization, the Bengals. Yeah. It's family owned, it's family run, and it's all football.
Well, with 2 weeks...
And there's a tremendous amount of commitment in both directions, from the people that work here to ownership, and from the ownership to the people that work here.
Well, we thank you for taking the time. It's so close to the draft. Thank you for taking a big chunk out of your day and for spending time with us.